Welcome to Vox Vomitus, also known as Word Vomit. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of Vox Vomitus. I am your host, Jennifer Ann Gordon, the author of the Kindle Award-winning novel Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent, as well as Pretty Ugly and the Hotel series. Joining me today, as always, is my Vox Vomitus vixen, Allison Martin, author of the bourbon books. I have a feeling she would like some bourbon right now. I don't think she has any. You would like bourbon, yes.
I always want bourbon. That's a silly question.
I know, that was a silly question. But the bourbon books includes Dibs Since September, Move on Melinda, and Climb the Salmon Ladder. Joining us today is, oh, there's nobody here right now.
Not yet, but...
We are very confident that the one, the only, Kyla Zhao.
She just came in studio, everybody. I'm putting her on. God. Kyla!
Kyla! Dramatic entrance. Kyla Zhao. I hope I'm saying your last name correctly. Author of The Fraud Squad has just officially joined us. Welcome, Kyla.
Thank you for having me. I arrived right on time.
I know.
There's nobody in studio.
There's nobody in the studio.
I tried to do a
dramatic introduction where I'm like, and there's no one here.
Well, we were joking. We're the kind of people who are neurotic and we're like, we're always on time. But Kyla is like, I'm arriving to the party late because it's my party. Because debut author.
Yeah, debut author. Both of us went to... Released.
I'm actually at work right now, so such a glamorous life.
Don't tell Kyla's boss she's on a podcast promoting her amazing new book.
Oh my gosh. I hope she never watches this, but yeah.
Are you in like a cubicle? Do you have your own office at least? Are you like just whispering?
Yeah, I'm in a conference room right now, so all's good.
Okay.
So the conference room doesn't really have the major grand piano behind you.
No, this is a virtual background.
It's fine. Yeah. I kind of figured because we've seen people live there before, and I don't think y'all lived together. That would be amazing.
I think Allison, you've lived there before.
I don't know if I've lived there. I think I have at least once. I've also lived in the Trinity College Library, and that's the time where the green screen made my hair disappear. So now I actually have like a real background. Like, knock on, don't knock that over, so that I'm always here and nothing disappears in green screen.
Well, Kyla, your book just debuted yesterday, correct? So happy one-day-old book birthday.
Thank you.
I know Allison got the Audible yesterday. I got the Audible today, so I am not quite finished. But Allison managed to finish your entire book.
That's impressive. That's
I only did it. I so cheated because, okay, for her is fantastic, but I made her talk a little bit faster so I could make sure I was done before I talked to you because I needed to know how it ended. So just as good at 1.3 speed. She's great.
Okay. I've never listened to an audiobook before, so I didn't realize that you could adjust the speed. That's pretty handy.
We've had to do it before.
We've done it before, and I've done it sometimes because of bad narrators where they have these like William Shatner pauses that are just unlistenable. But yours, I loved her, and I would have liked to listen to her at regular speed, but I'm like, I need to get through this before we talk to Kyla. So that was the way I got it done.
I got through 3 hours of it. At regular speed. But I did finally, I was able to figure out how to use my Bluetooth headphones without technical help from my husband for the first time because he was working. And I'm like, how did these even turn on? Yeah. And then I got so frustrated, I was like banging them and they turned on.
That should have worked.
Well, that works.
I know. I'm like, what's happening?
Okay, but Kyla, we want to hear about your book, which I've been blasting everywhere as like socialites, Singapore, status.
And fashion magazines.
Fashion magazines and Samantha Song. Can you give us just a little bit about yourself and your fantastic book?
Yes. Okay, so before I start, is it just me or am I the only one seeing the lag in my screen? Like, you two look perfectly fine, but is there a lag on my end?
Every once in a while.
You might not be as strong a Wi-Fi signal or connection, but it's okay.
Okay, my company does Wi-Fi, so this is concerning.
No.
Don't tell us who you work for.
I know, I'm like, whatever you say, don't say the name of the company.
Like, we know you work in Silicon Valley. That's as much as we're going to say, because that's what's on your bio, and that beyond that, we'll shh. But we're live, and weird stuff happens, so that's all we can do.
Okay, cool. Thanks for being flexible about it. But yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm Kyla. I'm the author of the debut novel, The Fraud Squad. Like you guys said, it's about fashion. It's about socialites, a lot of scheming and scandals and glamour. And it's basically about a working class woman who believes that the only way to get her dream job at this luxury magazine is to impersonate a wealthy socialite. And so she gets the help of two friends, infiltrates Singapore high society, and shenanigans ensue, obviously. But as she sinks deeper,
I'm here for the shenanigans.
We all are. But as she sinks deeper into this glamorous new lifestyle, her fears of being exposed also deepen, especially when there's a mysterious gossip columnist hunting for high society dirt and other socialites determined to bring her down. That's my little spiel.
Yeah, it's a very good spiel. Yeah, like 10 minutes into the book, I'm like, oh, this is like The Devil Wears Prada with like Gossip Girl and Crazy Rich Asians and all these things. And then I go to Amazon and it's like, if you're a fan of Devil Wears Prada and Crazy Rich Asians, you're going to love this book. And I'm like, I do.
Okay. I'm glad that the comparative titles are accurate.
Yes, I know. It's always kind of awkward when you're like, where did they get that this was like blah, blah, blah? Oh, well. But it did make me dig out a big stack of my fashion magazines so I could have them as like a prop.
Oh, that's awesome.
She's like, here are my magazines. They are not S.
They're not S.
But I want to just say, I just had so much fun listening to this, and it definitely has all those vibes with the Gossip Girl, because that's like one of the biggest plot lines in this, is that it's not just, oh, she wants to be writing this column, but there's this column out there already that she just, she both loves it, but also kind of hates it. And there's so much like love, lust involved in this secret columnist who just airs everybody's dirty laundry if you're fancy. And she's like, but I want to be fancy enough that my dirty laundry is showing to you.
Yeah, exactly. I think the love-hate relationship that the wealthy and the famous have with the media, that's always very fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. Because you know how celebrities, they always denounce paparazzi, but at the same time, they're also always calling paparazzi on themselves. And that's always been like super fascinating to me. And actually, the idea for this Gossip Girl character didn't actually come from Gossip Girl. It came from this story that I came across while I was doing some research for my book. And it's about this group of women from Shanghai, and they pretend to be wealthy socialites, and they use social media to bolster this image of them as being, you know, very wealthy, very affluent. But then how they got exposed and how they got brought down was because a journalist heard about it, and he pretended to be one of them and infiltrated their chat group. And then he wrote this like expose that just brought everything to light.
Oh,
and I was just
amazed
by how, you know, they use the media to their advantage. But in the end, it's also the media that exposed them. And that's kind of the same vibe I wanted to convey in my book.
Well, I love that. And I think I have like a weakness for like books about schemers and people playing a nice long con. So I'm just like, you know, like everything from like Undercover Cops to things like Inventing Anna, you know, like I love just the trickery of it. So, and you made it so much fun.
Yeah, this book was like one of the most fun reads I've had in a long time. And I was telling Jen, I'm like, my only complaint is that I had to listen to it at 1.3 speed to be done with it. Because I wouldn't say I would slow it down because she'd probably sound a little weird. But it was so much fun. I would love to be able to go back and listen to it again at regular speed. And just, I was actually taking notes of some of the ridiculous things being said. Like I wanted to start with us all saying prune. Get the perfect power.
I know. What's so funny is I listened to that part and I ran to my bathroom with with my Bluetooth earbuds in, and I was in the bathroom going,
okay, I have to tell you where I heard that trick from. It was actually from reading this British tabloid called the Daily Mail. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think that's what Mary-Kate and Ashley, the Olsen twins, that's what they do. And that's why they always have like this perfect red carpet pout. And I read this and I was like 14 then, and it's stuck in my mind ever since. I was like, these celebrities, they're on a whole new level. Like they have all these little tricks and tips. I love it.
Which is really funny that you mentioned them, because they're always the ones trotted out in the media of like, I think the last thing I saw is like one of the twins knows when you die and the other one knows how you die, because they always look really haunted now.
Yeah, they look like little haunted
dolls. They just look like someone has sucked their souls away, and it worries me. And my hope for that family is the youngest sister now, who's like, I'm a superhero, I'm good. But the two youngest ones are like,
exactly. No, worried. You got it right. It's also the Victoria Beckham face.
Yes. Well, you had a lot of British stuff going on too, because so one of the main characters is actually half Chinese, half British. And yeah. I admitted to Jen before we started, I said, I am a stupid white girl from California who needed a good map of Asia to put all these countries in relation, because we're set in Singapore, right? But yeah. You mentioned Malaysia, China, Indonesia, all these things. I'm like, I need to know how close these are. And can we hop on planes? Are these boats? How fast are people moving between these places? And then, of course, Timothy is half Chinese and half British. And he's starting, for half the time when he was talking about going to school in Durham, I thought North Carolina.
I literally thought it might take place in New Hampshire, like, because our university is also in Durham. So I was
Many Durhams.
I'm like, did he go to UNH? And then I'm like, why would he have gone to UNH, UK, University of New Hampshire? USA. Yeah.
Oh, you know, I didn't even think of that. I mean, I guess it reflects the cultural difference, right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Growing up, a lot of my friends go to the United Kingdom for college. And mm-hmm. so Durham was always like a really popular option. So that's like the first thing that comes to my mind when I hear the word Durham. But yeah. Obviously for Americans, it could be something different.
Now, if you would have said like Cambridge or Eton, I would have known. But Durham, like, Bull Durham? I don't know. These are things like nobody tells me these things. And it wasn't till later where it was like, oh, he went to college in the UK and that's when he studied there. And okay, that explains more. And I loved how his accent would get stronger or weaker depending on like his moods and everything.
His alcohol level.
Yeah. Right. I know people like that too, who are they tone down an accent and then it just creeps up on them.
Well, yeah, having a little bit of bourbon now. So if I start getting really New England sounding, you'll know.
We'll tell you to stop.
I'll be like, get away from Boston, Jennifer.
You're in California, but you don't sound like super Californian, which I do, which I appreciate that you don't, because you probably worked not to sound like that. But did you study out here or were you studying in Singapore? Like, where's your education background and how come you don't sound as Valley Girl as I do?
Yeah. Okay. So I was born in Singapore. I grew up in Singapore and I came to California in 2017 to attend Stanford University. And I've been here ever since. So it's been like, 6 years? Yeah. Wow. That's actually been quite some time now. And I guess my accent is not entirely American. I think there's definitely still like traces of my Singaporean accent.
Oh, yeah.
Well, but you don't sound Valley Girl. And that's because Stanford's not down here where we all sound terrible.
Yeah, where are you? Are you in SoCal?
Yeah, I'm in SoCal. And I do remember, I always share this story because it cracks me up every time, that the first time I traveled abroad, I went down to Brazil when I was like 17. And people were asking me, oh, where are you from? And I'm like answering in Spanish, oh, los Estados Unidos. And they're like, no, but like where in the United States? I'm like, oh, California. They're like, yeah, we hear it. So even in Spanish, I have a SoCal accent.
That's so interesting.
It's so bad. I'm just like, I swear I'm not an airhead, but some of it's just, it's genetic now. And I wasn't even born here. I was born in Pennsylvania, but it creeped in over the years.
You know, when I was younger, I really wanted to be a Valley Girl because I grew up reading these books called The Sweet Valley Twins.
Jessica and Elizabeth.
Yes, exactly. And then they were described as like, you know, the perfect Californian girls with their golden hair and their California
and 5'6" and their tan and they all
drive. Their little dimple.
Convertibles.
Yeah, and I was like, oh my God, I want to be just like them. Like, I wanted to be like a Sweet Valley Girl.
Sweet Valley Girl.
I wanted to, so I, for a while when I was like in junior high, I fancied myself a Jessica of the Sweet Valley Twins.
Because you've had to pick which twin you are, of course.
Yeah, even though I'm clearly an Elizabeth, but Jessica was like the one who was just like, like super confident and everything. And I'm like, that's who I want to be. She dated a 25-year-old and like,
oh my God,
the third book.
They had some pretty wild plot lines.
Because now, like, if you, like, thank goodness times have changed.
YA editor would approve that now. The YA editors would be like,
yeah,
we're not going to have the grooming. Let's just take that out. Thank you. Well, Jen and I were talking a little bit about like the genre of your book. So like, this is not a YA book, but it's got romance elements, but it's such a friendship-based book too. So I don't know when you guys were back pitching this book, where it fell, if they're like, okay, so Devil Meets Prada, Gossip Girl, a little bit of, you know, we've got some, the Fraud Squad in of itself, that title is just amazing. Right. Not just because it rhymes, but it's just perfect. But I felt like when I was reading it that the romance element was there, but the friendship one was the one that pulled me in just as much, with so many moving pieces and places where I was just like hurting and watching these friendships fall apart. And I just wanted everybody to sit down and be nice to each other. And I was like, Kyle, why are you doing this to me?
Yeah. I think that's a really good point about the genre. And I would say that it's not a romance. I think maybe in some parts it's been marketed as a romance, but I think ultimately it is more women's fiction. The story is very much about Samantha. And although there is a romantic plot line, I would say that that is not the primary plot at all. It's about how she comes into herself and how she's trying to find her way and define her own identity in this world. And it's also a career workplace story almost. And, you know, when I was querying agents, when I was looking for an agent, I did have some agents suggest if I wanted to age it down to YA. And they're like, oh, you know, you can remove all the mentions of the alcohol. And I was like, wait, what about her career? Like her job.
Champagne is required at these events. Come on, people.
Yeah, exactly.
And look, like, the kids in Gossip Girl drink.
That's true.
Precisely. Yeah. And then I was like, this is like a story about her career and how she's trying to get her dream job. Like, how are we going to remove that and put it into YA? But yeah, I think ultimately there is quite a lot of crossover potential between the YA and the adult audience, just because there are no like spicy scenes in this book.
Yeah.
Right.
So I feel like it's digestible for like a wide range of age groups.
Yeah. I was going to say I would say this is one that it gives you the feels without ever getting too risque or having people go, oh, let's clutch those pearls because we just had really graphic scenes or anything like that. And that I think, you know, that could make it YA appropriate, but the themes aren't YA because she's coming into her career and she's not brand new in this, which I appreciate it because she's like, she's put in her hours, she's put in the years, and she still sees that plum job just out of reach. Because if you would have done that when she was younger, you'd be like, grow up, girl, you gotta put in the hours, like everybody
you gotta have a bad job, sneak into the conference room and go on podcast
and sneak in to go on podcast and hope to go on that the internet's like, don't tell my boss what I'm doing. No, but I love that she'd put in the hours and she was still seeing that like this system is set up stacked against her because it's all about pedigree and you can't force your pedigree unless you fake your pedigree. So that's what she goes and does. Yeah. And the fact that she's got these other people who have their own reasons for wanting to go along and that it isn't just her. Like, I liked the fact that it wasn't just her, but she actually does have a squad. Like, the title is totally dead on. Like, these are the people and they're doing the fraud, giving her clothes, giving her the invites, getting her where she needs to go. But there are places where, like, some of those frauds, I was just going, this is going to bite you. This is going to bite you. Let's wait for it to bite you.
Yes, exactly. And I think ultimately I do like, I actually did consider like, you know, a fake dating plot line where she just like pretends to date a wealthy man like Timothy in the fraud squad.
I'm going to tell you, thank you so much for not doing that because it is one of my least favorite tropes. It has to be done pitch perfectly perfect for it to ever work. So like,
pitch perfect.
Okay. When the book first started and like there was like obviously some sort of chemistry with hot Timothy, I'm like, oh no, is he going to be your fake boyfriend? So thank you.
But that was not the way you went.
Yeah, because I mean, I wanted her to make her own name instead of just being associated with a boy who comes from a family whose last name is really so famous. Like ultimately, that's not what Samantha is about. Like she wants her dream job and she wants to do it on her own terms. And yes, that involves committing fraud, but ultimately it's very much driven by her soul.
Fun fraud.
Yes, fun fraud.
Well, and I think something that she mentions at some point, it's like, it was all about getting her foot in the door and then being herself though, because it wasn't like she was putting on some fake personality or anything, but more about she wouldn't have been gained or even offered entry to these places without those invites. And cutting back to the idea of like, it's so arbitrary who gains the invites and who doesn't. Yeah. That it's like, why should this person, because their parents are this, they get to go to these things and someone else doesn't because their mom is a nail technician. I really wanted to do my nails beforehand, but I didn't have time because, like if nails could be a character in a book, the fact that your mom was a nail, the mom, not your mom, you're not your character. Yeah. I do that. The mom is a nail technician. I was just like, there was some point, and this isn't a spoiler, but at the point where she's like, I can't look too good because then I won't get tipped as well, because like they don't like people who look better than them. They want to have people who are waiting on them be kind of more average and all that. I was just like, that's just sad.
Yeah, that happens. So yeah, it is sad.
Yeah. So you told us a little bit about your querying process. You obviously had agents say things like, oh, like, can you make this YA? Did mm-hmm. you stumble across anything in your like path to publishing that was just like those heartbreak moments? We have a lot of writers that watch the show and we all commiserate and go, oh God, like being in the query trenches, being out on sub, just like
the silence of sub.
What was that experience like for you?
Yeah, I would say that like the real heartbreak actually came before I entered querying. So I did this writing program called Pitch Wars, which is now no longer running. Yeah. Yeah. But they are famous because at the end of every cycle, there's this agent showcase where agents come and they pretty much like select your work. And it's kind of like a true train to getting an agent instead of, you know, having to go through the slush pile. But actually, when I was revising my book, when I was working on it, I kind of broke it. I wasn't doing a great job of it. And so I really fell behind. And then I had to make like the decision to not do the agent showcase. And I think in hindsight, like looking back, it's, you know, like it's such a small thing, but during that time, I was genuinely really devastated because almost everyone else in Pitch Wars was doing it. And then we were all in the same big chat group. And then I just, you know, like everyone was so excited and I was excited for them, but I kind of felt left out. And then I felt like I was falling behind. So yeah, I think that was kind of the first introduction to the idea that, you know, ultimately like writers, like we're all in this together, but we're all on different paths and different timelines. And it's so common to feel that sense of imposter syndrome or to feel like someone else is moving ahead of you. Yeah. And you really just have to learn with time and with experience to block it out.
Yes, exactly. I cannot agree more. You know, Allison and I are longtime friends. We've been through many different and the same ringers together. Mm-hmm. And it's, I don't want to say it, we love to hear these stories from people who are having smash great successes, but I think it's important that we talk about, you know, sometimes things go wrong. Sometimes we break our own books.
Yeah.
Well, and
I've done that.
Well, and I love that you pointed out that like, you're like, in retrospect, it wasn't necessarily the end of the world, but at the time it felt like that, because I think we've, a lot of us have had those things where it felt like the end of the world, something happened that like, my career is over, this is never gonna work out. But in retrospect, okay, we moved past that, it's okay. So I just hope that when it happened for you, you had like support people around you to say, Kyla, it's okay, we're moving on. Because I feel like that's the number one thing a writer needs, is like their buddies to say, we got you, we're not dropping you over this. We're going to keep pushing you forward, even when you can't do anything yourself. We're just going to hold you up.
Yeah, exactly. No, like 100%. And, you know, I do know that there are some writers who, like, as they move up the publishing stages, they kind of surround themselves with writers who are at the same stage that they are. But I think that really just creates, like, a very insular bubble. And it creates this sensation in your mind that if something doesn't go your way, it's end of the world. Mm-hmm. Like, you need friends at different stages of publishing, and you need friends who are not in publishing, who are not writers, just to give you like some balance and perspective in your life and remind you that at the end of the day, like writing is not the end all be all, and getting published is, it's very nice, but it's something that, you know, you don't need to have.
No, we don't have the nuclear codes, so it's not like
but it's always you know, having non-writer friends is amazing, because when they're like, your career is going so well, and you're like, is it? Like, they just see,
they see books, you know,
they see books, and they're, and like, you wrote those books.
Yes, exactly, like, precisely.
Yeah, like, yes, I wrote the books. Ah, they didn't see, you know, the hours of like scream crying and going, this doesn't make any sense at all, but you just keep writing and you're like, I'll fix it later.
Well, and I'm guessing, like, so some of my betas are non-writers, and I actually had the privilege, I have betaed for one of Kyla's books, another one that's coming out, but so that one, they aren't trying to make YA though, are they?
No.
Okay, so Kyla has also written a book that is a middle grade level book. Is that right? I'm like trying to remember if it's middle grade.
Well, actually, it started off as a YA, and then my editor asked to age it down to middle grade. So, like, you know, I think
eventually they're going to ask you just to do a picture book.
Not going to ever write a YA from the looks of it.
No, they're like, just keep going this direction.
You're going every single direction, but YA.
But tell us a little about that one, because I've actually read it. Jen hasn't, because she's not one of your betas, and that's fine. Getting Jen to beta something actually requires an act of God. But Jen's,
I know,
like,
I don't do it.
She's like, I don't do it.
I don't do it.
But Kyla's other book is about chess players, and specifically a young girl chess player. So if you want to tell us a little bit about May the Best Player Win, I should be able to say that a lot easier, but it doesn't rhyme like Fraud Squad. So
it doesn't. Yes, the Fraud Squad, that title came so easily to me. It was a title from day one.
Yes.
And then for this middle grade novel and for my second adult novel, like, coming up with a title has been such a heyday. But thank you for asking me about this book, because it's actually very close to my heart. I grew up playing chess. Chess is a very male-dominated game. So, you know, growing up,
we've all seen The Queen's Gambit.
Yeah.
See, I did not.
My book was, wait, so what? Good.
What? I haven't seen it.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Sorry.
Get out.
So everyone thinks that my book was inspired by The Queen's Gambit, but no, it wasn't. And, you know, I really wanted the title, The Queen's Gambit, but then Netflix got to it first.
No!
Bummer. Yeah. So it's about this young chess prodigy. It's a girl, and she makes a bet with a sexist teammate in order to prove him wrong, to prove that girls can be just as good as boys at chess. And then, you know, she's also trying to come to terms with her own complicated feelings towards the game, because she's always been defined as a chess prodigy. So what does it mean when suddenly she's not doing as well anymore, for instance? And that's feelings that I've also grappled with as a competitive chess player growing up.
How old were you when you started playing chess?
Oh, like 6.
Oh my God.
See, I'm picturing Kyla as a toddler, like, first, she's kind of still gumming the pieces, and then she's playing them and winning, because I can see her doing that. But
oh, I was losing terribly, and I would ask my grandpa to, like, always play with me until I win a game. And I think at some point he just started losing to me on purpose, because he really
I'm tired of this, Kyla.
Yeah, he was like, I want to go get dinner now. I don't want to keep playing. But I was like, no, more.
Yeah. I am terrible at chess. I had a boyfriend who was very good at it, and he taught me chess, and I was like, oh, this is going to be our game. And we had several dates where I was just like, we are playing till I win.
Wow.
And yeah, and it would be like 1 a.m. and he would just throw in the games at that point in time. Yeah, and I'm like, I did it.
Sleep.
Well, and I love, in both books, you have a strong aspect that's the whole parent-child thing, either between your main character and in Fraud Squad, you actually have certain, like, multiple characters who have complicated parental relationships, and how the parents' choices impact the child's choices and even the options in front. Because in Fraud Squad, like, I think it comes out pretty early, we've got a main character. So Samantha Song has only her mom still living. And by the time her father died, he didn't leave them in a place where they were by any means set for life. If that's a fair way to put it. And then, so something that Sam's mom says later to her in the book, and I was just like, I'm writing that down, because I hate it, but it feels so true in so many ways. But she said, it's better to marry well than to study well. And I really hope nobody said that to you, Kyla, ever. But I feel like in so many ways, especially for women, I mean, I think it's true for men too, but like who you marry and what kind of baggage they bring with them and what kind of choices they make so impact your life.
Yeah.
That in some ways it's like, you can always go back to school or do whatever that, but if you get involved in a marriage or someone brings you into debt or, you know, emotionally abuses you or whatever, that can really mess you up for basically the rest of your life. But I don't know if that was a quote that you took from someone or had heard somewhere, or if you just put perfect words in her mouth or what.
Yeah, I think it's, I don't know, like, even when I went to Stanford, which is like a good university, and, you know, the people there,
yeah, it doesn't
smart,
suck.
Yeah. And, but
Ivy League, but whatever.
I know, just a little known university for average people, Stanford.
Yeah,
but people who have 4.0s. them, you know.
Oh, well, great inflation is very real. It's yeah. Yeah, but a lot of my friends would joke, like, you know, like, oh, why am I working so hard on this problem set? Like, let me just go, because a lot of rich kids go to Stanford, and they're like, let me just find, like, this guy, and then I'll be set for life. Like, what's the point of having a 4.0 when I could be, you know, going out with, like, a wealthy guy? So, yeah, like, everything was said as a joke, but, you know, I think there is a kernel of truth in it, which is why people would even say things like that.
Well, and they joke there are certain universities that people only go to get their MRS degree. Like, they're really that as well. To meet and marry well. But there's pressure from different characters in Fraud Squad about parental expectations. Oh boy. Elisa von Schulman says, at my school, we called it ring by spring. Yeah. Wow. Elisa, I know what college you went to. I'm not going to out it, but I think that's probably more true at certain, maybe faith-based institutions where it's an expectation as well, because, you know, you cannot be complete without, that's not true. But if that's
I went to a fine arts college. There was no marriage, just debt and
going, which Starbucks are you going to apply to next? I don't know. What about you? Yeah,
just debt and working in retail.
Okay, but I didn't mean to bring up Starbucks to just go off on the tangent, but you have a scene, I'm not going to spoil it, but there's a scene later in the end where there's an explanation of what these coffees are, and I wish I had a pen to write this down because I want to go make some of these coffee concoctions because they aren't necessarily like what we can get in coffee shops here. I wanted to know if these were Singapore specific or Asian wide, or can I find them somewhere here if I go to the right place somewhere near me that has a strong Asian community, because I want some of these drinks like right now.
Oh yeah. So I think it's maybe local to Southeast Asian, but for sure, I think Asian stores would carry like the coffee packets that they make. Okay. Yeah. But I think it's actually really just normal coffee. And then it's just like called a different name.
Sounded better.
Well, it sounded better, but there was also stuff like, oh, this one has like evaporated milk and all this stuff. And I'm going, evaporated milk? You do stuff with condensed milk and we end up getting caramel. Does this turn into caramel at the bottom? And how do I make my drink become magical like that? Because I want that. And
I would like also, caramel at the bottom of a drink, please.
Well, Starbucks just dumps it right at the bottom. That's where it goes.
I was a barista.
It's just like down.
Obviously.
You're like, fine arts. Of course I would.
And well, then it's like, yeah, it was a barista, I know.
There's also like a toast that doesn't get described in detail till way later. And every time the toast came up, I'm like, I want this toast. What's on the toast?
Oh my gosh, yes.
What's on the toast? I don't care. I want the toast.
Yeah, it's like my favorite food and I miss it so much. It's called Kaya toast. And Kaya is this like coconut jam. And it's like not super sweet, but
okay.
It's just like the most amazing thing. And then it's actually green in color. I'm pretty sure they add food coloring to make it like look a little bit more green for the aesthetic. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's like delicious. So you put it on toasted white bread. You spread a layer of kaya. You spread some butter and you toast it. And it's like this warm, gooey, delicacy.
Okay. And so
you're killing me.
So is you're it more sweet me. Or more savory?
It's more, I mean,
yes.
I guess it's like a sandwich, right? It's kind of like PB&J, so I guess it's sweet.
Yeah, I'm going to need that. I'm going to be like looking around at any places locally. Like, do we have any place that is serving that? And I don't even know if they'd have to import that or what, because where I live, there are a lot of places that serve boba. We have boba in my freezer right now. Like, I can get a lot of the good stuff because I'm in SoCal. But some stuff is really specific locally that, like, we don't even grow that here. Forget getting something that you can't get unless you're in certain parts of the world and knowing exactly what to order and then the coffee too. I want all
this. Yeah, I mean, I can send you a link. I used to get mine on Amazon, but I think the price went up. So now every time my friends come visit from Singapore, I make them bring me like 4 jars of this jam.
Yes, that is the right way to do it. Well, there's certain foods that are only available in certain parts of the world unless you're willing to pay a huge markup. So like anybody who's going to the UK knows they need to bring me back crunchies or I get really mad because no, violet crumble is not the same thing. I want crunchy. And certain places, like they have just the right way to make it. And even if you can get it here, it's not really the same.
It's not. It's not.
I mean, my mom used to have my grandfather's church ship us mincemeat. That's how religious my mom was about mincemeat. And everybody else is like, what's in mincemeat? And I said, you don't want to know.
You don't want to know.
You don't really want to know. Okay. Have you ever had mincemeat, Kyla?
No, I don't.
It's disgusting. I'm a vegetarian. Disgusting.
Well, yeah, you are a vegetarian. You won't, but it's like almost rum raisin, where there's raisins and other fruit and stuff. And when my mom had tried to make it herself, some of the things were hard to find, like quince. Like, where do you find quince? But it actually does have like beef fat in it. That's why it's called minced meat. So vegan or vegetarians are going to be like, I'm not eating your stupid pie. I'm like, it's Pennsylvanian. I don't know what to tell you. And I think it's UK originally, but.
Yeah. And it was very popular in New England too, like any kind of Northeast.
Mm-hmm. Californians are in blissful denial about what minced meat is. And I'm sure most of them are like, we'll stick.
It's because of the words beef fat.
Yeah, it kind of throws me off a little bit. This reminds me of mince pies, which I think is a more European dish.
Yeah.
I used to think that they were like mince meat, like a savory dish, but no, it's like a pastry almost.
It's like a pastry, but they make it with beef fat.
I don't know how different a mince meat and mince pie is. I'll have to look that up. And pretty much like two of my best writer friends are in the UK, and we can pretty much every time we talk, there's at least one word that comes up that one of us has to go, wait, what are you talking about? I don't know what that is. Wait, you don't have that here? No, I don't know what you're talking about. And then they've got to send me a picture. I'm like, oh, you mean this? Like, they don't have string beans. They call them something completely different there.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. These cultural differences are so fascinating.
Mm-hmm. And you're like, aren't we all speaking English? And the answer is no. Yeah. You're like, Californian.
Sorry. Yeah, well, it's like eggplant, right? Like, I know three different words for eggplant. Yes.
Okay, I know eggplant and aubergine. What's the third?
Oh, it starts with C. It's like, I don't want to pronounce it. It's like C-O-U-R-G-E.
Oh, a courgette.
Like a courgette, or something.
Some regions call it that.
It might be, yeah. And sometimes there's like a slight difference, like a Japanese eggplant and an eggplant look the same, similar, but they're not exactly the same. So like, they are related vegetables, but if you get a regular eggplant, it's going to be bigger than a Japanese eggplant, you know. And when you get to something like chili, forget it, because there's 87 billion kinds of chilies.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah.
There's Anaheim, my hometown chili. Best for chili
tomatoes. Yeah. Oh, you're from Anaheim? So like, this is a Disney, right?
I know. Everybody just knows this.
Allison lives inside Disney World. I didn't want to tell you.
No, Disneyland. Disney World is Florida.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I stay far away from that if I can. But yeah.
I'm scared of people dressed like giant animals. So I've never been Disney. I know, which is I'm not that, obviously. I was like, I'm scared of like anthropomorphic things sometimes. Little known facts about Jennifer that I'm spouting on the show for no reason.
Well, and it's funny because like this food, this had a bit of food, but it wasn't overwhelmingly in food. But I did write down one other food product that is more of a drink. Tea bricks, like,
yeah,
that's a real thing.
Yeah. And
actually, oh my gosh, are they really that expensive? And where can I get one? And who is watching this is wealthy enough to send me a really fancy tea brick?
Yeah, so I actually only just found out about them like a couple of years ago. And it was because this guy that I know very tangentially, he has like this designated room in his house that is just for tea. Well, I kind of describe it in a book, right? Yeah.
It's amazing. I'm like, can I live in this room?
Yeah, like just imagine like having so many rooms. You can have one just designated pure tea. It's kind of like a wine cellar, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
And tea bricks are just like tea leaves, and then they have been really compressed and packed into like a brick form. And then you can do all sorts of like nice carvings on the surface, so it looks very nice and aesthetic. And it's just another thing that rich people can spend their money on.
Exactly. Like,
it's not all just purses and Louboutin shoes.
Well, it's funny because like my husband is a teacher, and the school district he's in has primarily Asian students, especially because he teaches like for the advanced classes. So it's pretty much, he's like, he may have one or two non-Asian children, and then they're from all over different regions. And some of them are first generation. Some of them have been here 17 generations, but he's like, I don't really drink coffee. I prefer tea. We got all the tea this year.
Oh.
None of them came in bricks. They came in all these great different things. Some of them are loose leaf. Some of them are all these great designer packages, jasmine tea, green tea, tea with every kind of brand. None of them came in bricks. And now I feel like they don't love him enough because we didn't get a tea brick.
Yeah, tea bricks are definitely expensive because just for it to maintain its form, like a lot of maintenance has to go into it.
Yeah, like how does it stay in there? And then once you have one cup, does the thing, like, do you have
to... Yeah, does it disintegrate?
Yeah, I don't know, actually.
I'm not that rich.
I'm also looking for people to send me tea bricks.
Exactly. For anybody who would like to congratulate Kyla Zhao on her debut, please send her a tea brick, courtesy of us.
And they have to be $2 million.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh.
That's amazing. Well, so there was a lot of food reference, but obviously there was a lot of fashion, because fashion is, okay, nails and fashion would be the other main character. And there was one quote I laughed at so hard, because there was one person, I don't remember who she was referencing, but saying they even made low-rise jeans look good. I'm like, wait a second, are low-rise jeans out now? I don't know these things. I know they don't look good to me, but...
They came back in... They were in, then they were totally out, and then the Gen Zs brought them back because they thought they were, like, cool. But the Gen Zs are also trying to bring back flip phones.
Oh, yeah. No, I think we're a weird bunch. But, you know, it's so interesting they bring up these things, because it's been, like, 1.5 years since I last read this book.
Yeah.
You guys have read it way more recently than I have. There are certain things that I don't even remember anymore. So, like, being reminded of this, like...
You're like, I wrote about low-rise jeans.
Yeah, I'm like, low-rise jeans. Wow, that was like a different time.
Well, I was thinking, like, I couldn't tell, and I think it was probably both, that first off, they were clearly something that wasn't supposed to be in at that point, but also that they really don't look good on most body types. So it's like, this person is just so supermodel that anything looks good. Because I know there was a girl who I went to junior high school with that everybody was just like, Irene Sao is so beautiful that she could wear a burlap sack wrapped in kitty litter and she would still look drop dead gorgeous. And she would, because she just was gorgeous. But like, I guess she'd probably also be able to pull off low rise jeans. But I didn't realize low rise jeans were such a...
They're very triggering to people.
They really are. That's super polarizing.
Yeah. I think my other favorite part before we end, and I know I'm like, I'm only on chapter 8 or 9 of the book. You have your character, Timothy, talking about how every guy goes through a Bon Jovi phase.
Yeah. Honestly,
and I laughed out loud. And I was like, it was just such like a one-line thing, like, oh yeah, well, every guy goes through a Bon Jovi phase. One of my friends got a tramp stamp of Bon Jovi, and I was like, more of this. This is the world I want to live in, where dudes are talking about their Bon Jovi phases.
Yeah.
And their tramp stamps.
Well, so getting back to the genre, this is like a friendship comedy with romance elements, because the reason I want to call it a rom-com is because it's so freaking funny, and so many rom-coms I read really don't ever make me stop and laugh or even chuckle, and maybe they're slightly humorous, but this is just, I mean, like, I had to stop and write some of these things down, like, first off, the fact that there were animals named Mochi and Peanut, like, what is this, my children naming them? Because that sounds like stuff my children would.
Those are such common Asian pet names. It's like a running joke that Asians always call a pet Mochi or Peanut.
Mochi. We're all Mochi. Well, because the first off, Mochi is something to eat, so it's cute, but then there's like these little squishies that are called Mochi, and my kids all have Mochi everywhere. I find like random Mochi around my house, and my daughter runs a Mochi spa where she cleans them because they get dirty because they're kind of sticky almost.
Interesting.
But they're really cute. And I'll put them sometimes on my, I don't have one here because I'm in the back room, but I usually will put like one of them with me. I'm like, oh, I've got my Derpigator here because his eyes are kind of like this, but he's a little gator Mochi. But the other line, and I have to say this one, because you also referenced a series that I'm not a big fan of, but you did it in such a wonderful way. The woman can contour a nose on Voldemort.
That's a great line.
No nose, but she can contour the nose.
Oh my gosh, I forgot I had that line in there, because this was before the whole like debacle blew up. And actually I had another Harry Potter line that I removed.
You're like, no,
because of this thing. And I completely forgot about this Voldemort line. Okay.
But that's a good line.
But it's such a good line. And it's like, we joke that that's the price of going evil, is you lose your nose, because there are other characters like Vecna on Stranger Things. So if you ever had to do an update on this, you could say she can contour her nose on Vecna, because Vecna has no nose either. It's like, is it? You grow evil and your nose is just gone.
Yeah, well, I hope Stranger Things never gets canceled, because if not, I'll have to keep updating my book.
I know. And they're supposed to have one more season and then be done. So I don't think it'll be like canceled. So hopefully everybody is...
You could always say she could contour her nose on a syphilitic patient from the Victorian era, because they also lost their noses.
They also lost their noses, but...
But super gross and disgusting reference.
Yeah, that's kind of gross. Like, why is she touching...
I'm a horror writer.
They're probably still contagious, possibly. And then I'm worried about her. But Voldemort, that's syphilis.
Yeah. Kyla, thank you so much for joining us today. You have been wonderful to talk to. Thank you for taking a little bit out of your work day, hiding in that beautiful conference room with the grand piano.
Yeah, no, obviously it's my room.
Yeah, obviously. Thank you so much. And of course, Allison, thank you. Thank you, everybody who's watching.
Thank you so much,
watching.
Everyone. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I had a lot of fun.
Stay tuned next week when we have Amber Garza. We were supposed to have her a couple weeks ago. We had her rescheduled. And very excited. Amber Garza next week talking about her book, A Mother Would Know.
Whoa, that sounds really good.
It is so good.
We read it and then we had to reschedule and we're like... We'll just be like this for a couple weeks then.
Yeah.
And with that, we'll go. Bye-bye.
Hi. Thank you.